Okay, well, as I say, Boris and Brexit, Boris Johnson, in the morning, we're joined now by the man you just mentioned who played a central role in the negotiations for the Good Friday Agreement. He was Tony Blair's chief of staff between 1995 and 2007. And Jonathan Powell joins us now from London. Just before we get into the discussion of the negotiations and Good Friday and what mattered and all that, what were your thoughts on that Fintan O'Toole idea?
Well, I thought, like many of Fintan's ideas, it was very imaginative and interesting. The only problem is I don't really see Sinn Féin going for it, and if they don't, it's not a practical solution. It would be nice to think that was possible, but I just have my doubts. And having heard a Sinn Féin MP on the radio here yesterday saying it's out of the question, I kind of don't think they're going to go for it.
Right, OK. Now, let's move on to the substance. From your perspective, your experience, your location and all of that, does Boris want just a no deal and be done with it and take the consequences?
Well, as ever with Boris Johnson, he probably hasn't decided. Just as he famously wrote two articles about Brexit, he's probably got two ideas in his mind. One idea is that by trying to frighten the EU and frighten Ireland by threatening a no-deal Brexit and looking as if he means it, as Dominic Cummings apparently rather inadvertently told some of the special advisers in the government yesterday, and then trying to come in with his charm afterwards to try and find a solution. And he certainly is still saying that he sees a no-deal Brexit as a million to one. So one part of him is trying to go down a strategy which will get what he thinks is a better deal by dropping the backstop and getting a deal that he can sell to Parliament. The other part of his brain is probably thinking, well, if I go for a no-deal Brexit, that will be popular, that will help me eat the Brexit Party and become an English Nationalist Party, which gives me a chance of winning an election. If Parliament won't pass or prevents me from moving for a no-deal Brexit, then that gives me the opportunity to go for an election. And if progressive forces in Britain are split between the Liberal Party, which is hovering around 20%, and the Labour Party hovering around 20%, I get an overwhelming majority and I can do what I want. So I suspect, as always, with the bifurcated Johnson, he's going for both.
As you say that, it's not unconvincing.
No, it's a clever strategy. But yeah, clever strategies often have a habit of coming undone. And if it is possible for progressive forces in Parliament to stop a no-deal Brexit, at least we're safe from that horror. And then it's a question of whether people can unite in an election to try and stop Johnson. And that doesn't require them to win a majority. It requires them to win 100 seats. So if you could have something like the 1919 election is famous for other things in Ireland, but in Britain it was the coupon election, where Liberals and Tories ran on a coupon from the National Unity Government to the First World War, and they won. So you could imagine Tories, Labour, pro-Europeans and Liberals and Greens running on a coupon election where they unite to try and stop the Tories in at least 100 seats, and then they could prevent him forming a government. So all is not lost. It's just going to make politics a lot more complicated.
It's sure shooting will, though I hate even saying the word shooting in the context. Since you know your way around the people and the issues and all of that, how do you think the DUP has handled things? And do you believe, you know, given there's a majority of one now, do you believe they feel secure?
Well, on the DUP, the DUP has relatively weak leadership under Arlene Foster and has at least two parties. It's the party in Parliament here in Westminster and the party in Northern Ireland. They have two rather different interests. Someone like Sammy Wilson likes hanging out in the bars with the ERG, the right wing of the Tory party, and they're very much signed up for Brexit. Those who have to contest local elections and assembly elections in Northern Ireland can have a rather different view, because I think their support will be more dubious about the virtues of going for a no-deal Brexit or for a hard Brexit. So I think the DUP have a problem politically. They're very unlikely to back down on anything that undermines the union, but if it gets past that, then they're in a more complicated sort of position.
Right. If you go back to the origins of the backstop and the kind of special position of Northern Ireland, which they found repugnant, to a certain extent, the rest of Europe might look at it and say, lucky them, you know, that they get the best of both worlds, or cake with a cherry, etc. But they don't seem to see it that way.
No, as I heard Arlene Foster saying the other day, the clue's in the name. It's the Democratic Unionist Party, and what they were founded to do is preserve the union, and that comes before even economic prosperity. So I think I can see why the backstop is a problem for them. Although, again, you're talking about what happens if there's a no-deal Brexit. It's worth thinking as well what happens if Britain ends up going for Boris Johnson's aim, which is a Canada-style free trade agreement. If we go for a Canada-style free trade agreement, Britain is out of the single market and the customs union, and that means that Northern Ireland would have to go back to the original backstop, not the backstop where they the single market issues, the regulatory issues are involved, but both that and the customs union. So you would definitely have to have special measures for Northern Ireland in that case, and there would definitely be a border down the Irish Sea.
And definitely the DUP don't want that.
And the DUP don't want that. But of course, if Boris Johnson were to win an election with a majority, he doesn't need the DUP anymore. So in those circumstances, when going for a free trade agreement, he can do what he wants.
To a certain extent, that's true. During your time and Tony Blair's time and all that, relations between Britain and Ireland, you know, warmed up and probably culminated in the visit here by Queen Elizabeth. And it looked like, you know, it was full steam ahead, good relationship between neighbours, etc. As I know, they operate in Brussels or operated in Brussels. What's going to happen, do you believe, now to Anglo-Irish relations? Are we all going to slip back into the old clichés and stuff we had thought we'd shaken off?
Well, it doesn't help to have the Brexiteers on this side of the ERG throwing their insults at Liv Radker and at politicians in Ireland. I think that's just sort of childish and doesn't really help anything at all. And it will be a setback for Anglo-Irish relations, and that's a shame. I don't think I hope it's not a permanent setback, because the previous bad relations had very, very deep historical roots. And I think many of those problems had been, if not cured, at least put in some sort of perspective. So I don't think I hope this is not a permanent setback, but there will be some rebuilding to do once the Brexit issue has been resolved. And I hope that both governments in those circumstances will try and do their best to do that.
I don't know if you heard Ray Bassett there earlier in the programme. You know, the backstop was designed to block a border, to not have a border. If we stick to our guns, the possibility, the argument is, it may in fact create that which we don't want. Do you think there should be shifts on that?
Well, there is a logical problem here. And while it is true that if we have a no-deal Brexit, you're going to end up with a hard border anyway. And that's undoubtedly true. And that is one of the paradoxes of this. But the reason you end up with a hard border is exactly this logical problem that people tried to deal with by coming up with a backstop. And that is, if the rest of the United Kingdom is outside the single market and outside the customs union, then you have to have a border. There's a reason countries around the world have borders. And we would have to have one along the Northern Ireland border with the Republic. The only way out of that is to have a border somewhere else. You could have the border around the whole of the island of Ireland, but that's going to be, that's impossible, because then Ireland would have to effectively leave the EU in terms of the single market and the customs union. Or you have the border down the Irish Sea between Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom. That's the logical problem. Someone needs to find a solution to that. And the only one anyone's been able to come up with in the last 3 years is the backstop. So I think that's the default. That's what you have to have. That's why it's a guarantee. If someone comes up with a better solution, then that's fine.
Ray Bassett.
As I say, if we're actually going for a Canada-style free trade agreement, it's going to be worse rather than better.
Okay, Ray Bassett?
Yeah, Jonathan, I agree with you, but in the situation where we've just got the backstop with a border down the Irish Sea, then all the onus is basically placed on Britain to make some of the changes and arrangements. I mean, Ireland is going to be in a very a difficult situation in if the UK leaves, and the bulk of our trade goes through the land bridge in Britain. I'm saying that, you know, the single market has a load of exceptions in it, and we have got to look at how we can present, how we can work exceptions so we don't need that border. For instance, the Canary Islands doesn't levy VAT. So if we have to make some changes, let's do it. But I really want the Irish and British governments to come together and try and put a package and go to Brussels with a solution as opposed to a problem. Now, the solution's not going to be easy, and it may require compromise in a number of areas. But just to say that the whole compromise must occur in terms of Northern Ireland leaving the United Kingdom's sort of economic jurisdiction, I don't think that's going to run. I don't think it's going to run with the Conservative Party in Britain, and it won't run with some of the Labour Party people.
Well, I'd just say not very many of the Labour Party people, not a significant number, really. But you're absolutely right, of course, about the need for the British and Irish governments to talk to each other. And that's one of the reasons I think it's so unwise of Boris Johnson to make it a precondition that the Irish government and the EU drop the backstop before he's prepared to negotiate. Do you remember John Major, at the beginning of the peace process, made decommissioning of IRA weapons a precondition?
Yes.
When they went for a ceasefire and wouldn't say it was a permanent ceasefire, he said they had to give up all their weapons or he wouldn't bring them into negotiations. And the trouble with preconditions is people then say, well, no, we're not going to do that, as the IRA did. And if you remember, John Major then had to collapse to, well, give up most of your weapons. They said no. Give up a token number of your weapons. They said no. And it just ended up as a way of frustrating negotiations. Yes. That led back to Canary Wharf. It was only resolved when George Mitchell came up with a solution that, and even then it took us 10 years to find a way around that problem that we created for ourselves. So I think Boris Johnson making it a precondition of negotiating with the EU and with the Irish government that they drop the backstop is a recipe either for humiliating climb down by Boris Johnson or for getting to no deal. So I hope the British government will be a bit more grown up, drop the precondition and start talking to the Irish government and start talking to Brussels and doing so in parallel. As I understand it, that's what they've been doing for the last 3 years anyway. Ollie Robbins has been coming over to Dublin and talking to people and meeting Irish officials in Brussels. It's not as if there hasn't been discussions between the two sides.
Right.
It's just that no one on either side has come up with a solution to this problem. But
okay.
I agree, it's a problem.
Jim Power?
Yeah, it strikes me that there's a number of issues here. It's clear that we're not going to avoid a hard Brexit without the backstop being put aside. How does Leo Varadkar put it aside without losing huge political face credibility? So I think politically it would be a disaster for him. But then if you look at the German perspective on this, I mean, German car manufacturers sell a lot of cars into Britain. They certainly do not want a hard Brexit.
For sure.
But yet they have been kept quiet by the German political establishment to date. But I feel over the coming months, I think that sort of voice in Europe is going to become more powerful. So I think we've got to back off the backstop. I don't think it can remain in place. I would agree with Ray. I don't see it working anyway. So I think we need to find a way out of that.
Yeah.
And that's where the bilateral negotiations are incredibly important. But as I say, from the government's perspective here, how they can back away from the backstop without doing themselves serious political damage.
But that's
the problem.
There's serious implications, though, if they do back off the backstop for Northern Ireland. And some of the things that they're really concerned about is violence, because at the moment...
insisting on the backstop is one way of guaranteeing a hard border and violence.
But ultimately, you'll end up with a hard border anyway. They're trying to avoid a border in the first place.
Well,
I mean,
not necessarily. If the GUP would accept the original one, where Northern Ireland would be treated differently in terms of commerce and trade
But the DUP has ruled that out. They ruled out any deviation from the union. I think that's the big issue here.
If you
back away from the backstop, what everyone is concerned about is those dissident Republicans up there have a breeding ground there. There's a lot of communities out there, a lot of people that didn't benefit from the Good Friday Agreement, a lot of inequalities. They're very concerned about the impact it's going to have
in terms of violence.
But insisting
on the backstop guarantees the same thing.
But ultimately, that's where you're going to end up going if you don't have some guarantees for the people of Northern Ireland.
Like what?
Well, I think if you don't have some kind of first principles that there's going to be no border, I mean, that's the key. They had 3 years to try and come up with some alternative arrangements, and they're unable to do that. Now, they may come up with alternative arrangements in the years to come, but they haven't done that to date, and that's why the Irish government has pushed for this. But the other thing I'm more concerned about as well, if you do agree and capitulate on the backstop issue, there's other threads in the Good Friday Agreement that this current war cabinet that Johnson has assimilated would like to pull. And the big one is the European Convention on Human Rights and the Human Rights Act. Priti Patel is now the Home Secretary, one of the Thatcherite members of the Tory party. And if you listen to her rhetoric this week in terms of what she's coming out with, and human rights campaigners north and south are really concerned about that, because that was a fundamental part of the Good Friday Agreement. It was going to protect people against internment. It was going to protect people against collusion with security forces and with paramilitaries. And it was going to protect people against discrimination in Northern Ireland. And we're all waiting now for this next thread to be pulled by this Tory party.
But if you insist on the backstop, you are guaranteeing a hard border. So you end up with all the same results. So that's why I think insisting on the backstop is incompatible with avoiding the problems that you're suggesting.
But if you look at the other alternative here, he has a way out, actually. Boris has a way out. He runs a general election. He's got a good campaign team behind him. He could get a majority and he could sell out the DUP. He went to dinner with Arlene last week, but he's the kind of guy that could sell you out the next week.
But if you look at...
To be a little bit realistic, when I hear all commentators and all politicians and all who are in favour of the backstop saying... the EU 27 will never change their mind. I sit there and say, how do you know that?
How do you
that?
Know, absolutely.
And you know, when you talk about German car manufacturing,
I was just going to ask Jonathan Powell one question. The talk of, you know, with the majority down to one, if Boris is angling for a general election, because I think that's a big part of what he's doing, is he's angling for a general election.
He says he's not.
Well, I
quote the man.
Yeah. But, I mean, does Jonathan Powell think that, you know, if the DUP are out of the picture, does that change the dynamic of things? And does Boris Johnson change his mind? I would like to hear what Jonathan Powell has to say about that. But second of all, in relation to the Irish position here, you know, Simon Coveney has been very consistent in pushing this line that the EU 27 are backing us to the hilt. You know, I've been a big critic of the EU, particularly how they handled us 10 years ago in relation to... But in fairness, so far they have shown a remarkable consistency. I think largely for European, for their own
interest.
It'll be very interesting to see now. You have a new cast of characters around the table in a lot of key positions now, and see what sort of dynamic changes when they meet again in October. But ultimately, I think you're likely to see, in my view, a pause or an extension. Enough times to see an election both here and in the UK, and then I think they might try again.
And the question to...
Just whether or not does Jonathan Powell think that if an election happens in the UK and the DUP are no longer the kingmakers, does that change the whole issue in the backstop, and does it change the importance of same?
Would you see that as how it would pan out, Jonathan?
Firstly, I think he has two options. One is to force the EU to back down by trying to frighten them, which I don't think will work, because I don't think the EU will abandon this. I don't think that the German car manufacturers or... what Johnson referred to, the Prosecco makers of Italy, are going to be the ones who force Angela Merkel and the European governments to change their mind. I think they'll stick on this. But his second option is an election. I think he stands a good chance at the moment of winning it, unless, as I say, there's a progressive forces come together and stop him in 100 seats, in which case we have a very different game. If he were to win a majority, Boris Johnson has no particular fixed points. And yes, if he needed to abandon the DUP to get to a solution, so he could get to a Canada-style free trade agreement for the rest of Great Britain, and that's exactly what he would do. He's turning the Tory party into an English national party. They're not interested in Scotland. They're abandoning the Tory party in Scotland, which has a very different position, and that they're focusing entirely on trying to win seats in England. And if they get that, then those are the interests that they would protect. But just if I may say on the point about the backstop, it's all very well to say that, yes, we just get rid of the backstop and that will solve the problem because we won't have a hard Brexit, and that's right, we won't have a no-deal Brexit, which will impose a hard border. But if you get rid of the backstop, you will have a hard border. And no one has come up with an alternative. Like anyone who says they want to, well, we should drop the drop the backstop because it's just too difficult and we're going to end up with a no-deal Brexit, needs to come up with a proposal of how it can be replaced. And the stuff about technology is just nonsense. Firstly, technology hasn't been invented, and if it were invented, it wouldn't solve the problem. As soon as you put a camera up on the border or near the border or 5 miles away from the border, a dissident Republican is going to shoot at that camera.
There are lots of cameras on the border.
They're going to shoot
at the moment.
They're going to shoot at the policeman. As soon as you shoot at the policeman, you're going to have to put the army in. Once the army are in, they're going to want helicopters. And it's worth remembering that how many of the IRA campaigns started as border campaigns, and that's why the Chief Constable of Northern Ireland is pointing out the danger of this, and that's why Theresa May signed up for the backstop, even though she didn't want to, even though in the end brought down her prime ministership. There's a logical conundrum here. And anyone who says we should get rid of it or put a time limit on it has to come up with an alternative.
Ray, you were saying there are cameras.
There are cameras on the borders. And there have been cameras on the borders for quite a long time. I cross the border every week and I passed under the cameras. The cameras are there to stop motorists who are speeding in the south, mainly from the north, and that was a joint agreement between the government. I agree completely with Jonathan that putting preconditions is the worst thing on this, but I think we should try and get into detailed negotiations with the present British administration about avoiding a hard border. That should be the key issue for us, and maintaining as free as possible trade with the UK and with the rest of the EU. But at the same time, we should be prepared to make sacrifices on our side. We should be prepared to say that if, for instance, the Taoiseach has said about having a single food market or for agriculture products in Ireland.
It's the headline there today on Sunshine Badgar to push Johnson for all Ireland.
Maybe we should have a special Irish one, which is not... Is he talking about the actual EU agricultural arrangements being in Northern Ireland, or is he talking about a special Irish arrangement? I think in this, there's a programme in the European Union called the Outermost Regions. And the Outermost Regions says that if you're not attached to mainland Europe, you can make deviations. I think we should be looking very heavily at deviations. For instance, the vast majority of traffic across the border is agriculture and construction goods. We've got to look at ways that we can try and manage these. Now, we will never get 100% solution. The perfect in this case can be the enemy of the good. I just know that a lot of the people who are involved in on the customs side say you couldn't do it at the moment with the technologies there, but in a few years' time, with a lot of investment, and Mr. Carlson and Neil Cody from our own customs area has said, we may be able to get close to it. Let's get together and start working on this as bilaterally, not to...
Ray, what about the human cost as well? It's not just about trade over the border. There's 50,000 children living around the border counties, and they cross the border every day to go to youth clubs, go to school, hang out with their friends. This is going to have a big
effect.
Even
a hard border, nobody's talking about migration. The British government have said that they're going to enforce new immigration laws very much at the employment end, because people can arrive from Poland without a visa. Nobody talking about actually stopping people crossing the border.
That's ultimately what's going to happen in the context of a no-deal Brexit.
Why do you say that? Because all parties have said they don't want a no-deal Brexit.
But here's what's going to happen if you have a border between
Northern
Ireland and the Republic.
But you're going to get one if they go ahead.
Yeah, if they go. But here is the issue. If you have a border here, and we know ultimately if we get rid of the backstop, that's what's going to happen in any case. People will be expected to carry their passports across the border. And when we voted for...
The Good Friday Agreement, we never carried passports to go north.
Well, actually, you sometimes had to do, and even today, if you're a black and ethnic minority person. I mean, I studied in human rights in Queens, and I used to get the train down. The Gardaí used to get on, and they'd go and pick out the people who were black, and they'd ask them for their passports. This is going to have a big effect on how children and young people think about themselves. It's going to impact on the economy in around the border counties as well, because remember, the highest rates of child poverty in Ireland, some of them are actually in around the border regions because of the historical effect of that border region on the economy in that part of the world.
I take your point. But all parties, all sides, there's agreement on all sides that people don't want to return to that border in that time. But there's the possibility that this backstop could copper fasten it and have the opposite effect to that which you desire?
But I think it will happen anyway. This is the issue. You get rid of the backstop, we're going to end up with a border. This is our way of copper fastening the special place of Northern Ireland. That's my perspective on it.
Okay, I go to you, Gail?
So we're having this major discussion about the backstop, but I'd actually like to ask Jonathan Powell, if he's still on the line, even if we remove the backstop, what is a kind of, given the parliamentary arithmetic, do you actually think the withdrawal agreement without a backstop would actually pass the House of Commons?
Good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. I think it probably wouldn't, because there are other reasons that people dislike the backstop, and there's probably a majority against Theresa May's withdrawal deal, even without the backstop. In other words, you get the RG votes, you get a handful of Labour votes, but you then lose everyone else, including up to 30 or maybe more Tory MPs. So it would probably be defeated, but it's very hard to predict until you actually had a vote on it.
And if it were, as Gail said, without that backstop, and you had the other two bits to pay the debt and to protect rights of people and travel, what would they be objecting to then?
Well, the people who would be voting against it would largely be those who don't want to have a Brexit. So you'd have those 30 or so Tory MPs people like Philip Hammond have been relieved of their job and therefore have no longer have to vote for something they don't believe in. And there's really quite a large number of them because of Boris Johnson's light of the long knives. So you're probably looking at 30-odd Tory MPs. And as you said before, Boris Johnson now has a majority of one. So 30 MPs go one way, say 5 Labour MPs go the other. It will get defeated.
Yeah, but I tell you, Labour or Conservatives, you all have your problems at the moment. One last question to you. Presumably Boris Johnson and his advisers are figuring out how to move now. Do you think he will go and visit all the heads of state, or do you think he'll say shtum and stay in London? And if he, say, called on Merkel or Macron or whoever, how do you see that panning out?
Well, as I say, I think the problem is that he's imposed this precondition. So he's actually boxed himself in. He can't go to Dublin or Paris or Berlin without climbing down from what he said, which is that they must concede the backstop before he'll talk to them. And that's a sort of classic mistake in negotiations. Either he climbs down or he can't have a negotiation.
Right.
So the first time he's likely to see them will be at the G7 summit, when he will see those leaders and when he will obviously discuss this issue with them. And of course, he's also sent his aides to Brussels, but his aides are going to be talking very much their line at the moment, which is to frighten the EU and to say there is going to be a no-deal Brexit and that's what they're going for.
Right.
So I don't think that he is in the mood. His strategy doesn't fit with the negotiation at the moment until he can force the EU to think it's in a weaker position and try and negotiate then from a position of strength. I personally think he's miscalculating the EU position. I do not think it will be determined by German car makers or Prosecco makers from Italy. It will be determined by the politics of Merkel and Macron, and I think that they will see this as bluster and as a threat. Even if he goes through with it, the people who will be damaged are the United Kingdom and, I'm afraid, Ireland, but much less so the EU. The EU will be damaged, but it will be nothing like as bad a thing for them.
OK, listen, we will leave it there for a moment. And I know that you also take the view that a lot of the people have never read the Good Friday Agreement and the whole problem of identity. But anyway, we can't rehearse the whole thing all over again. So in the meantime, may I say, Jonathan Powell, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning, and we'll take a break.